I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope.
What'd you like to know?
I'd like to know a response to what the gentleman said.
Right. But what do you want now?
Well, if I have to teach you how to be a reporter, Ollie, I'll do that later.
And the Bulldog.
Oh, why don't you do that later, Jim? I think the lady expressed herself, and you're not here, you're there. Is there any question you'd like me to ask her?
On WGR.
And no, I'll give you lessons on how to become a reporter later.
I'll give you some lessons on how to be an editor, because I was your boss once.
Yeah, you were, and are no longer. How did that happen?
Sports Radio 550.
Keeping it professional.
A couple of old friends being reacquainted live on television.
That clip of our morning show has made the rounds and continues to amaze and impress and baffle. Along the lines of an earlier point about how, like, when you lose a couple, everything sort of goes upside down. You know, when you're winning, it's the MVP and Super Bowl odds and power rankings. Here's one, and I'm forcing it. This isn't really at all a criticism of the other player who sort of connected because he's excellent. Although I didn't like the one thing he did last night. But who is Pro Football Focus's highest graded receiver in the league through 6 weeks? Do you know?
I do not. I might want to guess that it's because of the way that you have framed this, that it's the kid in Minnesota that the Vikings drafted with the pick they got from the Bills. That's Justin Jefferson.
That's right. Justin Jefferson is the highest graded PFF receiver in the NFL. Not rookie, all receivers. He has, I don't really know their grading system. I hear about it from other people. But
oh, I know it. I know it. It's garbage.
I like it. No, I think it's fun to talk about. I like that it makes people mad because, you know, I love it when it's like watch the games and no one watches more games. So, Justin Jefferson, three games this year of 90-plus. That's good. You know, like when you're in school, 90-plus is good?
Yeah, right. That's a good grade, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He has three 90-point games. DeAndre Hopkins has two, and no other receiver has as many as two. So, Jefferson killing it, apparently. He's got a couple of, you know, like Sunday, he had a huge stat day. They were way behind early.
Yeah, he's had a couple of really big plays, really nice plays. Big highlights. Yeah.
That set up well for him. So he's LSU. He is the pick the Vikings use that they got from the Bills for Stephon Diggs. And a lot of the fantasy talk about Jefferson was, well, he was a slot receiver in college. What are they going to do? How are they going to replace Diggs with him? But I guess they are.
I think they figured that out.
Sounds like they figured that out.
Well, they're not having any kind of team success, but yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. What are they? Are they one in something? They lost two games in a row by 1 point.
One of those was the Tennessee, right?
Tennessee and Seattle.
What are they? Standings.
One and five?
Yep, 1-5. Yep.
Not great. Not great, Bob.
No, that's pretty bad.
Yep. Here is Pat with us on WGR. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Mike and Bulldog. Hey, I've been following the Bills since 1964. I hate to admit it, but and I love the Bills. I got season tickets and everything. But I wanted to piggyback on what that last guy said about going to watch practices at War Memorial. The Bills used to practice in Blaisdell on Mile Strip Road. It used to be called the Regency. It was a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So they held the training camp at the Regency, and it was like a mile from my house, so my dad used to take us over there. And I remember when they used to initiate the players, you know, they would cut their hair and all that stuff.
Yep.
Then they would send them out to see everybody. And one thing I do remember really vividly is O.J., when he first, it was like his first, you know, he's a rookie, and I got up close there. He just had like a snow fence there, so you could you could watch him, and you know, you could almost interact with him a little bit. But I looked at OJ and I go, he's not that big, because I'm 6'2", and he was like, he was supposed to be 6'2", but I didn't think he was 6'2", you know. And so that you know, he was listed at 6'2". But it was right where BJ's is on Mile Strip Road in Blaisdell, if you guys know where that is.
I know the spot. Yeah, I mean, it's where the thruway off-ramp for Mile Strip is right there. Yeah.
Hey, Pat, do you happen to know where the Bills had their first training camp?
Oh, no.
I hope I'm right, because I'm gonna say it. Do you know Bulldog?
I think so, yeah.
The Roycroft.
Right, East Aurora.
East Aurora, yeah.
And they moved to the spot the caller's describing, and then eventually to Niagara University, which is where I had. I don't remember thinking OJ is not as big as he's purported to be or anything, but I also had that snow fence. I got OJ's autograph when I was, 7 or 8 years old at Niagara University.
Oh, yeah, I think I got some of their autographs, you know, but I can't remember whose autograph I got. But they used to have, like, I remember a couple of their early draft choices, like Bobby Crockett and Gary Bugenhagen, for whatever reason. I remember those names, you know?
Yeah.
And I probably got some of those autographs laying around my mom's house in Orchard Park. But it was an exciting thing, because, heck, they were like I say, it was like a mile and a half from my house.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, to say, hey, let's go over there and check them out. But one thing I don't remember is the first game that I ever went to. I just don't, I don't know why. I don't remember it, but what the heck? I'm 66, so.
You're doing all right.
Hey, I can still dial a phone.
It sounds like you're doing all right. I mean, don't beat yourself up over that one, Pat.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot for calling us, all right?
Okay.
Thanks, Pat. Don't want him to be too hard on himself for not remembering his first game.
No, I mean, that can happen.
OJ did all right, despite whatever suspicions existed about his actual height.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
He managed. He had a career.
Yeah.
He did all right. And you and I have a couple of odd coincidences, similarities about our lives, first concert and first baseball game was both in Cincinnati.
You're right.
And while this is not that weird because it's like the Bills and we're both natives, but I would have been the same age going to Niagara. I'm younger than you, so OJ was gone by the time I went. But Ferguson, like 1980, remember Dr. Fleckenstein taking her son Tommy and me to Niagara. And that was awesome. And they all signed a pennant. Jerry Butler and Ferguson, Reuben Gant.
Cool.
I was always an offense guy, so they all signed the pennant.
I had those autographs were all in like a little pocket-sized spiral notebook with like Snoopy on the cover of it or something.
Yes.
And I lost track of the notebook over the years, but from even like moving from apartment to apartment on the West Side, moving to Connecticut, I always had the OJ autograph somewhere. And there's a bottom drawer on my dresser that just is, you know, just stuff, you know, that if something that looks like it's in danger of getting swept out, I will stash it in the bottom drawer. And then, you know, once a year or so, I'll go through it and just sort of, you know, okay, do I want this? Is this of any value to me? Do I remember why I have it? Whatever, that sort of thing. I cannot find that OJ autograph. I don't know where it is. It was in that drawer, you know, I've had the same dresser for a long time. It was always in there, and I cannot find it now. Last time I looked, I was like, damn. You know, just it was always like, you know, all these years later, still kind of a curiosity to have that autograph. It was very, very legible, like very clearly his autograph.
He had a great autograph.
Yeah, and I just can't find it, so I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah, that he had O.J. Simpson has had, if not still does, have a great autograph. Classic. Do you ever, you mentioned you have an old dresser. Mm-hmm. Do you ever, like, walk in, say, you, like, you look at your closet, and there's all those clothes there, and the dresser, and whatever else, and just think, I'm going to have that forever. I'm never getting a new one. That's it. I'm never replacing a dresser again. Right? Like, why would you?
Uh-huh.
Why would you? You just open the drawer for socks and close it. Most of my clothes are hanging up. I hardly use it. There's some stuff piled on top of it, like shoelaces and a couple of pictures. Nothing of interest.
Yeah.
But, like, what would happen to you that you would need a new dresser? Like, you would move, maybe.
Yeah, we would move, and it would have to be, like, just a very different, you know, my house is generally pretty big, but the rooms aren't. Like, our bedroom, like, the master bedroom is not. Like, there's a king-size bed in there, and my wife and I each have a dresser. She's got a walk-in closet in there. And, I mean, there is room in there to do nothing. I mean, you could walk in and open the drawers to all the dressers, but that's it. Like, there is no space. So in order to ever have different stuff, that would have to, like, we'd have to move, and it would have to be, like, we'd have an actual, you know, master bedroom, so to speak.
You downsize, and you get rid of some of that furniture.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, what am I, like, just going to go shop and buy a new chest of drawers or something?
No.
Like, why would I'm not doing that.
No, it'd have to be a whole new room that might, okay, we're starting over. You know, we're leaving that stuff behind. We're a new life, whatever.
New life. And,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd be dragging that dresser. That the dresser I have belonged to my grandma Parker. Like, I've had this dresser has been in my parents' house for, like, I mean, I don't know life without this dresser.
Right. So that adds to it. Like, you would hate to get rid of it.
Yeah.
It would not feel good to get rid of it. We have my grandmother's piano. How many keys? 88 keys? Like, 50 don't work.
Gotta keep it.
You make it tough. It makes it tough to play.
Yeah, it sure does.
50 of the keys. It's hard enough with all the keys. You got to figure out how to maneuver around the 50 broken keys. But what am I going to do? Take it to the road? It was hers. My grandmother's. She was born in 1909. It was her piano. Really? Like, I can't fix the 50 keys. I don't know what you do sometimes. Ben is with us. Hello, Ben.
Hey, guys. Dr. Fleckenstein, some old dressers. Let's bring it back to Buffalo.
Let's go. Help us.
Yep.
Do it for us.
Counting on you.
Yeah, so first things, I want to get your thoughts. What would you guys think if you seen Jerry Hughes? Maybe not, I know this sounds weird, but maybe on passing situations, not rush as much and drop him back and come. Since they're trying to get rid of the ball quickly, obviously that's like the new NFL. Just get it and, you know what I mean, rip it. And, you know, I'd like to see that a little bit more. Obviously, you know, Sean McDermott, I think, is a great defensive mind. And I do think he's going to make the changes necessary for it. But do we have the depth and the players necessary to do that? And that's going to bring me to my second point. I'll hang up and you guys can go through your thing here. But with this whole COVID-19 update list, all this stuff that's going on with it, the players that have opted out, is there any chance whatsoever that they have a way to get back in if they change their minds?
Not that I know of.
No, I do not believe so.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, really, I don't know what they're going to do about the defense. You know, I respect, why wouldn't you? You know, like, respect what McDermott has accomplished, what he knows. And, like, there's just no reason to question his motivations at this point. They got to get better. So we'll see what they come up with. I mean, they made a couple of personnel changes last night, and that didn't accomplish a lot. This is going to be a thing we talk about with respect to this game for as long as we're ever talking about it. I accept his explanation for what they wanted to do. They just could not come up with the plays they needed, and in combination with the fact that the Chiefs didn't give them anything to win. I mean, they were in touch in the game. On a messy night, their offense did badly, and I think their concept, their strategy on defense helped keep them in that game. So, I understand him on that. He's being criticized for that, and I understand why, but I feel like he was right to look at Kansas City that way. They just could not get there. So what they do to fix a unit that's been struggling, I mean, the stats are not good. One thing you can do is play the Jets again. That's a smart move.
Don't play Kansas City.
Stop playing all these teams that are in the top 10 in offense. They've played four already.
That'll help.
You know?
Yeah. I thought the game, the plan was a big letdown. Like, I intellectually understand why he might have felt that way. But, like, I felt like I was really pointing at, let's see what he's got in store for his former boss, his mentor. Let's see what he's got. And it was basically, like, just run me over, just don't throw it. And I still feel like Kansas City, when they wanted to throw it or needed to throw it, was able to throw it. They just didn't do it that often because they were getting 7 or 8 yards a chunk for most of the game. And there were some carries at the end that sort of, I think, hurt their overall average. But I thought I was going to find out if I can get in the ring. And what I found out is I got to go back to the gym. I'm not done working out.
With that, Eric Wood coming up. More Bills Chiefs with us, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, here on WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, joined by Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline. Eric, what are we – it's a Tuesday afternoon here. What are we taking you away from?
Yeah, what are you taking me away from?
Yes.
I put this into my schedule, so you're fine. Today was college football prep. What else? I have Tulane at Central Florida this weekend, so that is a lot more prep work than if it's an ACC-ACOC opponent for me, so – get me away from a computer screen for a little while.
Is that a good rivalry, Tulane and Central Florida?
It's an AAC matchup. Unfortunately, Central Florida lost their last two games. Over the past 3 years, they're one of the top five winningest programs, including the last two losses. In both games, they blew an 18-point lead and a 21-point lead. If they don't blow those two leads, then I'm on the sideline for a top 10 team this weekend, but instead it's an unranked matchup.
It's no surprise that you're grinding at that work, because that's just the sort of person you come across as to me, and I think to a lot of our audience. Do guys who've had the job that you have now at the ACC Network, guys that have had them for a long time, do they sort of like laugh at you because you're working so hard, or does everybody grind it out like this?
Well, if you want to keep your job, especially in the times right now, you need to be grinding it out. You know, it's ESPN, who I work under the ESPN umbrella, so that's why I'm not on an ACC game this weekend like normal, and they had to furlough so many people. So I'm grateful to have the job, and you know what? Here's the approach I took as a player. Whether it was a preseason game, a practice, no matter what, you could always take any play that was on video and say, that's who you are as a player. And so even though this is not going to be my biggest game I've ever done, and last week I was in the booth and I had an awesome experience doing a game in color for college football and my second one doing that, and I'm back on the sideline this week, they could take any play from this weekend. If I have low energy, if I stumble over the open, if I don't know what I'm talking about, if I mess up someone's name, they could always cherry pick that and say, you're unprepared. So I try to take the same exact approach as I did as a player and just go hard all the time, put out my best at all times, because I'd never want to be cherry-picked as, hey, look at this guy. He doesn't hustle when he's on the backside of a zone play or something. That might not be a great example. But
That's fine. I got it. Yeah. No, you're an inspiration, man. Thank you for the answer.
That. Yes. Yeah, I'm kind of sick of my dad referring to me as a guy who drafts candy on the radio. But then I think, you know, talking about whether a team should have punted the day before isn't really that much different. So I'll accept it. All right, Eric. All right. So
hey, you know what? You guys serve the people of Buffalo each and every single day. Provide them entertainment. A lot of them on their drive home from a day at work that people may or may not enjoy, and hopefully you uplift them before they walk in their house. And if drafting candy provides entertainment over a disappointing Bills loss, good for you all.
It entertains me when I drive home, at least. So that's that's at least something. All right,
appreciate that, Eric.
Thank you. Yes. So this game last night, Eric, like it's the Chiefs, and you know the Bills were an underdog here. I don't know how many people who watch the league thought the Bills were as good or better than the Chiefs, but of course at the same time there are. Again, like last week, concerns about the Bills after this game. So how critical do you want to be?
Well, I was hoping if I just uplifted you guys a little bit and talked about my college football, we wouldn't necessarily have to get to all this.
We'd never get to the game.
No, I mean, yeah. No, there's obvious concerns after two losses now. I think some perspective is always needed, and you lose to two of the better teams in the NFL on days where your offense didn't have great nights, and you know, you took away what the last two teams' best quality was, but then you couldn't take the alternate away enough. For instance, 2 weeks ago, Derrick Henry, and this is debatable whether him or Ryan Tannehill is kind of the secret sauce in Tennessee, but you hold Derrick Henry to 3 yards a carry, but you can't contain Ryan Tannehill from escaping the pocket a few times. He converts a big third downs, you turn the ball over a couple times and you lose down in Tennessee. And then this week you hold Patrick Mahomes to 245-ish yards and you don't let up any big plays in the air. You hold Tyreek Hill to 3 catches in the game, but you give up around 250 on the ground and 38 minutes of time of possession, but only 26 points. But you take away what both teams did best. And I don't think you can shy away from that, you know what I mean? And so you got to be better at taking away the secondary deal, but I don't think there's as much panic needed is what I'm kind of seeing shot at me on Twitter and what I'm reading and kind of hearing through the One Bills Live stuff that I did today. But there's obvious concern when you lose back-to-back games, especially in neither game. I know you had a one-score game. And if you get a stop, maybe the Bills can sneak that one last night and the week before. You know, there's positions where you're in it in the second half, but felt like they weren't in control of either of the games, you know, kind of in the second quarter and on. So there's some concerns, but from my point of view, not a whole lot of panic.
The run stopping, it was 245 on the ground and 225 through the air is what they gave up in the game yesterday. And, you know, I can understand wanting to prevent Mahomes from throwing it all over you. But, boy, being better at stopping the other thing is the problem. At least it was in this game. And because there's no way you could convince me that the plan was to let them run that wild on you. So what have I got there? Maybe we can start here. How badly do you think, if at all, this team is missing Star Lotulelei? They really don't have a replacement for that style player on their D-line.
No, you're right. I think they are missing him. And there was times last year, even with Star, that they got gashed. And for periods, I think it was back-to-back weeks of Miami and Philadelphia last year, and Star was healthy and playing, and they were giving up chunks in the run game, and then they kind of hunkered down. And it didn't become an issue the rest of the year. I look for those changes to be made. I don't know if it's personnel changes, but we saw some last night, Zimmer and Cox being elevated and being activated to the 46-man game day roster over Trent Murphy, over Harrison Phillips. So, you know, they're experimenting personnel-wise. I think mentality-wise, at the end of the game, when they knew they were going to run the ball, and they were ticked off about getting just run over the whole game, and they actually had Cox and Zimmer in for these moments, then they were able to stop the run at a pretty good rate. And so last night, were they defending the run on the way to the quarterback, which is an old Jim Schwartz term that I got from him, an old Jim Schwartz saying. And because there was times where, you know, Kansas City doesn't run a ton of read option with the quarterback. So they're running shotgun runs where the defensive end was going towards Mahomes, and that was the unblocked guy as Edwards-Helaire went up the middle, and it was like if the defensive end took a route to the running back, you know, maybe at the TFL every other time, but he was going towards the quarterback and then going back to the running back, and he never made the play once. So were they telling those guys to go at the quarterback, and we're truly going to try and shut Mahomes down on this day? I'm not sure. It's hard for me since I'm not sitting in those defensive meetings, but long answer to your question. I think, yes, you know, all the new bodies up front, having Milano out, Edmonds with a shoulder injury, I think all of that is contributing to some of their lack of success on the defensive front seven.
More with Eric Wood after this. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. With Eric Wood, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR. And there are a couple of plays later in this game that were almost shocking to see from a Bills team. Trey White's out-of-bounds hit. Jordan Poyer's was even more severe. Even got Sean McDermott after the game to criticize that and say, like, there's no place for that. Then, if you want it, Stephon Diggs just sort of lazily running back to the line of scrimmage and being late for the next play. I don't know, Eric. Maybe they're not all the same thing as you look at it. But I've got veteran guys on a team that's gotten a lot of credit and been winning. And here in this game, I don't know, they cracked.
They did. And it got me, too. I mean, I was frustrated watching those two plays by those defenders, and those are isolated. And, you know, these aren't guys with character issues. They were frustrated visibly and to make bad decisions that they don't make often. I don't think I've ever seen either of those guys get, you know, a unnecessary roughness that wasn't, you know, something bang, bang on the sideline or something. And then I don't know if the Stephon Diggs deal was a miscommunication, you know, just like a misunderstanding, miscommunication, or if that was truly just he was frustrated. And if I'm Stephon Diggs, what they were doing at cornerback last night was pretty much like old school championship run Baltimore Ravens stuff. Like, hey, let's just beat him up at receiver and we'll take penalties. We'll take hands in the face. We will take defensive holding. That's fine. We're not letting the Bills receivers take the top off the defense and maybe they'll quit trying it. And you know what? We didn't complete any deep balls and you have the receivers visibly frustrated at the end of the game.
Tennessee was rough with him too. I mean, he had 10 catches in that game, but I thought in that game it was sort of obvious that they were punishing him. So I don't know, maybe these things are just separate things, but bottom line, like you said, they did not hit those plays in this game, and they're under 20 points again. And for all the talk that we've had about the Bills defense and their strategy and their performance, like, the offense is the story for me. I always thought they would have to score a lot to beat Kansas City. Like, that was how it felt last season. This year, it's looked like they're capable of it. But you didn't have that last night. And so, I'm not surprised that the Bills don't beat a Chiefs team when scoring in the teens.
No doubt. You weren't going to beat Kansas City last night. No question. By scoring 17 points. Now, could the defense help you out and got off the field more? Yes. Could the offense help themselves out and to put more points on the board? Absolutely. And to beat a team like the Chiefs, you're going to have to play clean on offense, and they play clean from the standpoint of not turning the ball over. And the one that would have been the turnover on downs, luckily, was a snap infraction because they got stuffed. But you're going to have to do more than just play a clean game with no turnovers to beat the defending Super Bowl champions with the best quarterback in the league. To your point, they were going to have to score 28, 30, 35 points before the game. I said that they were going to have to score, I think I said 31 points or something, to beat Kansas City, and they didn't get it done.
How about the Bills' run game? We talked a lot about what Kansas City did to them up front and, you know, try to, you know, guess and feel around for some reasons. There's some stats making the rounds here about the percentage of run plays the Bills and specifically Devin Singletary are facing with not stacked boxes, in other words, advantageous situations to run the ball, and they still can't seem to get the ground game going. I imagine there's some problems up front, and maybe that's a multifaceted thing where it's guys are taking turns, but either way, on a night where it was sloppy, and Kansas City, maybe much like Tennessee, was inviting them to run, they could not do that effectively either.
You're right. And the yards per carry for Devin Singletary is a concern this year. Last night he's at 3.2 yards per carry. Zach Moss at 2.0 yards a carry. But when you look at that, you know, he's in for a lot of short yardage situations. He's generally, unless he busts one, he's not going to have a huge yards per carry based upon the runs that they had him in for last night. But when you look at Devin Singletary, it is concerning. And, you know, it's hard to put your finger on it necessarily. There's a lot of penetration in the backfield. The one where they showed the end zone review of was the 3rd-and-1 right before the snap infraction QB sneak that I referenced earlier. And on that play, the 3rd-and-1 play, Cody Ford, the way he came off the ball, not even looking back at Jones, who made the inside move on him, he thought that Mitch Morse was coming with him. Mitch Morse was combo blocking with the backside guard. So, to me, that's a pure miscommunication. And, you know, that stuff can get fixed. And maybe, you know, it's hard to blame stuff like this 6 games in on something with not having OTAs, not having, you know, as much work, not having preseason games, I'll say. It's hard to blame that 6 games in when we didn't blame it in games 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And so, to me, there's some issues up front, but, you know, that goes offensive line, that's tight end, that's quarterbacks getting them into the right play at the right times. And, you know, Devin Singletary, this was pretty much the same line as last year. I'm not saying they're playing as high of a level as last year, but it's pretty much the same offensive line and the average over 5 yards a carry. So something's going on with the run game.
With Eric Wood for just a couple more minutes. Eric, I've got to ask you about the Dolphins. Ryan Fitzpatrick taken out. Like, I think most fans sort of are expecting that to happen at some point, or were. But Fitzpatrick really did not make it easy. He did not have any kind of a blow-up game. And, you know, more to the point, in their last 2 weeks, they have dominated and won in routes. But it's the bye, and Tua is a top-5 pick. And so here we are nonetheless. I wonder, you know, what you think, or maybe you know, what Fitzpatrick's reaction to that might have been. And then, like, are the Dolphins legit to you?
So a couple questions in there. I did not speak to Fitzpatrick yet. I tweeted something about it. He's not on Twitter under a handle that you would recognize. I have sources that say that somehow he sees a number of my tweets. I don't know if that's from his wife, his son, or who it is, but he has access, but he does not participate. I'll say that. So anyways, I have not spoken to him yet. I don't really even know how to phrase it. Maybe you guys can text me some words of advice after this. Maybe that's my question for you guys this week. Right. How do you reach out to a buddy that should not have been benched but was? You understand what they're doing, but you don't agree with it. You know, what's the wording? But, you know, when I look at the situation down there, you know, Fitz had said from the very beginning, he knew the situation. He was there. And he said it on my podcast when we recorded one over the summer. Yes, he's there, and he's going to teach Tua. He's there for him. He's going to mentor him. But he's going to compete like hell to keep that starting job. And that's what he's done. He won the starting job, first off, and then he's played well enough to keep it. You know, is there strategy to go out and win this year and make a run at the AFC East? Then I think you keep Fitz in there. But, you know, you play Tua in basically a situation at the end of the game last week, hand off the ball, you have a bye week coming up. Maybe you just think this is the time for Tua. Maybe this isn't Flores' decision. Maybe this is not Chan Gailey's decision. I'm assuming it probably comes from above them. So there's a lot that goes into a quarterback decision like that. And, you know, obviously I'm going to be biased of one of my best friends and say that 50 should not be getting benched. But I think there's a lot of people around NFL circles and just around the country that agree with me.
Yeah, and I wonder if he could be traded. And there's been some speculation about that. is you see Dallas struggling or other teams, I would guess that the Dolphins would not want to do that, that it might be a pretty high asking price or higher than what is realistic. They have draft picks already. Houston's 1 and 2, as well as their own and maybe others. And I'm sure they appreciate and value what Fitzpatrick's role has been and what they see it being as a backup. So, you know, he's insurance besides. I would think that they would not want to do that, but I would love it, Eric. I would love it if Ryan Fitzpatrick got traded. Okay, if it's two a time, it's two a time. Then you don't need Fitz anymore. And he goes to a team. I mean, the Cowboys is a really fun idea because, like, they're loated and they're 2-4 and in first place. Like, you know, the guy's never been to the playoffs. What a story.
That's what I was just going to say. Fitz has never been to the playoffs. Yeah, give me Fitz to Dallas, and I'm all for it. Plus, I've always loved when Fitz played in the NFC because it gets a lot easier to root for him, even harder than I normally do. You know, normally it's like this balance of like, oh, I really want Fitz to do good, but I sure don't want to see the Dolphins win again or the Jets or the Titans, and the list goes on. But I would be all for Fitz the Dolphins. And I never answered your question about, are the Dolphins a contender? You know, I haven't seen enough from Tua to know. You know, I know he played well at Alabama, and then he had that massive injury last year. We haven't seen him in, I would say, over a year. I don't know the exact timeline. Right around a year, we haven't seen him, and he was playing against college guys. He gets no OTAs, no preseason games. I'll go ahead and take the no on that one.
They are sixth in the league in point differential. Now, again, they took their quarterback out, but like they're stopping people. They have a better point differential. They were above Kansas City until last night. Arizona passed them as well last night, but like they're off to a very nice start, 3-3. Maybe they are more the competition for the Bills than New England is.
And you might be right there, honestly. And you know, we'll see how New England does when they get past this coronavirus outbreak situation they got going in New England. But you know, when I looked at New England from the start and I saw what they were doing with Josh McDaniels and Cam Newton, it was great coaching. But unless they're going to embrace fully what he did in Carolina in his MVP year, get him in the shotgun, quarterback powers, a lot of play action similar to what the Bills were doing with Josh Allen to start this year. His arm's not as dynamic as Josh's, but similar stuff. Then I didn't think that they could kind of out-scheme people in a normal under-center, kind of Tom Brady, kind of Cam Newton-looking offense, and we'll see how that develops throughout the year. But to me, it didn't look like it was sustainable that they were just going to kind of continue to trick people, and then their defense, to start the year, playing well. But all the opt-outs they had, as soon as they have any injuries, coronavirus, whatever it may be, they're thin on defense.
Well, Bulldog, I don't know how to advise Eric. Like the question he has about how to reach out to Fitz depends on how good a friend you are. I mean, like if something like, I don't know, you and I work together, but say you lost your job. Let's say for the sake of this point that we're friends.
Okay.
So right. you lose your job.
This is already far-fetched.
Right. So I might joke around with you instead of just being like, hey, I'm sorry to hear the news or something like that. Like if you, right. I'm sorry to hear is sort of what you say to somebody you don't know that well, but you have their number.
Right.
Yeah. I think when it's a close friend.
That's kind of the predicament I'm in.
Yeah. I think, dude, tough one. I don't know. Like that's, you know, like that might
demand a trade.
The best I'm going to do is like, dude, tough one.
Dude, what the heck are they thinking down there? Demand a trade unless you feel like being at way more of your son's and daughter's soccer games on the weekend than right. Shoot takeoff after Saturday morning walkthroughs up Tampa, then come back to Miami for the game Sunday and chill out. I don't know.
Right.
Probably somewhere in between sympathetic and that.
Right. Dwayne Haskins might have had a cold and missed a couple of days there. Who knows? Maybe Fitz can have a cold or something. I don't know. I'd love to see him on a new team and be able to keep playing. Eric, great to talk to you as always, and we'll do this Monday next week if that works for you.
Yep, sounds good. And I'm all for Fitz playing for a new team, and I want it to be like a brand new team for him. I want him to get just another touchdown pass as a starter from another franchise and just keep racking up and just keep padding his stats on his already NFL record.
like McCown with the kids having all the jerseys. I mean, he's got a bunch of kids, right? He needs to add to that list, maybe. All right, thanks again, Eric.
Yep, my pleasure. See you guys.
All right,
thanks for listening. Enjoy Game 1 of the World Series tonight. Tomorrow, Austin Gale of PFF joins us. We'll see you at 3 o'clock right here on WGR.
Gentlemen, be free.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.